This is A's Cast Live, your comprehensive look at the Oakland Athletics.
Drive to deep center field, going back, Hernandez at the track, right to the wall, gone! Elvis Andrus!
And 29 other MLB clubs.
High drive, deep left field, Arenado left the building.
Guerrero lifts one to left field, and gone!
Ohtani, that was a moonshot out there in the right center.
Alonso defends his title, the 2021 Derby champion.
Join us as we take you inside the baseball universe, from OPS Plus to juiced balls to game-changing moments. We have you covered. Spend your afternoon with us next from the town, only on A's Cast Live. Here's Chris Townsend.
You want to talk about a jam-packed show. This show is so jam-packed, we've got a guest that's not even on the list. I mean, I got Tommy Malone, former A at 4:15. Nick Allen hit his first career home run yesterday at 4:30. The general manager of your Oakland Athletics at 5 o'clock. Scott Emerson, you're so hard to get. Calling his agent to try and get him on the show is so hard to do. So we're thankful just to have you today to lead off.
Yeah, I'm so hard to get. I just take any open time slot, right?
I gotta think you probably never in your career were a leadoff hitter.
No, not at all. Never a hitter. Let's get that one straight.
In basketball, in your illustrious basketball career, I don't think you were a point guard.
Oh, I was a point guard. I can tell you that one.
But you're a point forward?
I did a little bit of everything.
You could handle the rock back in the day?
Oh, yeah.
All right, so one of the things that we love to get into with pitching with you is about the business of pitching, and we talk a lot about the science, the art of pitching. Yesterday, Eno Saris said something that I hadn't thought about, and velocity has been such a big thing that's changed in our game, and he talked about that maybe the pitch clock that makes guys work faster, have to throw the ball faster to home plate, they have less time to, whew, all right, gear up, throwing it as hard as I can. You got to get the ball and go, get the ball and go, especially for starters. Do you think the pitch clock would keep people from this, everybody's just trying to throw as hard as they can?
You know, I really haven't dove too much into this pitch clock, but, you know, the headset that our guys are wearing, I think guys are working at a faster pace in the big leagues with the pitch comm that everybody's using. He brings up a valid point that the guys are making pitches faster and maybe running out of gas a little bit faster and not having the time to take a breather in between pitches. So it's something that should be looked into for sure.
Well, because you got to think, when you were growing up, learning how to pitch, they didn't want you coming out of the gate throwing every pitch as hard as you can, because they want you to sustain and be able to go longer in the game. You up your velo when you need it, but you don't do it on every pitch.
Well, we never really talked about velocity. There was no radar gun tools measuring us in, you know, junior high or measuring anything we did really in high school unless a scout showed up. Now you got these radar guns that these parents can go out and buy, and everybody's looking for that velocity, which, you know, useful velocity is very important at ultimate levels. But, you know, I go back to, you know, being able to pitch. At the end of the day, can you pitch with what you have? You know, you can come up to the major leagues and you can throw it as hard as you can, and that doesn't make you a good pitcher. So the guys that are great pitchers in this game also know how to throw strikes, and they know how to do what it's called, pitching. And they just happen, a lot of them, to have plus velocity.
We talk so much about velocity. Is it a little overrated since we're having more breaking balls thrown than fastballs? So all the talk about velocity, but they're not going to it.
Well, in reality, what's going on is everybody's trained in their arm for arm speed and for them to be able to throw something hard. If you throw a breaking ball harder, it's going to be better than a breaking ball that's softer. So what happens sometimes is guys, they train themselves to throw something hard, which in return makes their breaking ball that much harder and later to hit. And sometimes, you know, an overthrow per se could lead to less fastball command, but they have the ability to spin a breaking ball inside the strike zone. So, you know, I always preach, you know, and talk to guys about, if you're unwilling to throw your fastball, it's not because you're afraid of it getting hit. It's because you're not sure of where it's going.
One thing that I see down here as we're doing the show Ace Cast Live from the field, which is so special, only show on Major League Baseball done from the field, is I notice you'll actually have relievers who will go down before the game, like right now, right? It'll be 4 o'clock, and they'll actually heat up and get on the mound, and you guys will use your technology, and you'll see what they're doing, and they'll throw some pitches. And I just go, wow, that's so different. We would have never done that. And as someone who was a career reliever in college, I would never before the game get on the mound and throw pitches knowing that there was a chance that I could be throwing like 3 hours later. When did you guys decide to be able to heat up a guy before a game to work on some stuff knowing that it's going to be hours before he pitches again?
Well, you know, I came into this organization in 2003. And Ron Romanek was the pitching coordinator, and Rick Peterson was the pitching coach. And they talked about command being the number one priority, being able to control the baseball. So if you look what hitters do each and every day, they go in the cage and get their reps in, and they swing the bat off in the cage, off the machine, off the tee, and then they come outside for batting practice. What are pitchers doing to keep themselves ready to throw strikes in games? So, you know, we try to keep them anywhere between 8 to 15 pitches. It's generally, you know, the pitcher has had an off day or two, and then we get them up on the mound. If we're working on a pitch, you know, they'll throw some flat grounds, and then our guys will come up and throw a few pitches. So it's not like we're asking them to throw a full out bullpen. We're just getting them up on the mound, getting a touch and feel per se is what we kind of call it. Some of the guys, we move the catcher up, getting the slope underneath them, learning to drive the ball to the bottom of the strike zone, or, you know, throwing to the top of the strike zone. So I think it's important that pitchers do in practice what they're doing in the game, right? So if you're just not getting off that mound enough in your practice sessions, you know, how are you going to be in games?
Yeah, and then I think about the timing. You do it when they get here, but what would, in your opinion, in a perfect world, like you can have these guys here at 9 in the morning, right? Because we see in the NBA, we see in the NHL, they have what's called morning skate or morning shoot around. They'll skate for their legs, or in the NBA, they get you going. Even though you're now not tipping off well till 7:30, 7:45, what do you think ideally for the arm for players would it be to have them do something like that? Is it 4 o'clock for a 6:40 start? Would it be noon, and then they have a whole lot of rest? What would the optimum time be?
No, I think 4 o'clock is good. You know, one, you also have to remember we're not quite getting to max effort on those certain days, but we're working on some touch and feel and the ability to, you know, I always believe if you can't really throw it slow inside the strike zone, how are you going to throw it hard at max effort? So if you can develop some touch and feel playing catch or even throwing a light bullpen, I think it's beneficial for you for when you get into the games. As you gear it up, you can command your baseball. So, you know, the unfortunate thing is there's not really any studies out there that can prove this, or any studies that can't prove it. So we're just kind of going on our what we've done here in this organization for 20 years, and that's, you know, when a guy needs to get off a mound for a little bit of touch and feel, we get him off the mound and, you know, work on moving his baseball around.
So Paul Blackburn going to be going tonight for the Athletics, and when I think about the secret sauce for him and what he's been doing, it's one of two things. Is it his work on TrackMan and what you're getting with the data, or is it pizza? Because he says he has pizza, and that's the thing he's got to eat the night before. It's Lucky Pizza. What's more important, data or the magic pizza?
Man, you know, good for Paul Blackburn, because I ate pizza the night before and I was terrible. So, I'm so glad that Paul's having a good one with pizza. But you know, like I said, incorporating data into your everyday use. But you know what? I've always been a big proponent of, you know, players are creating the data. The TrackMan is just giving us extra feedback on what the ball is actually doing. Even if his ball doesn't measure up to some other elite type pitchers in the big leagues, we can still take that data and understand where to start it, where to move it, and hopefully what counts we're throwing it in by looking at the hitter's data. So, you know, TrackMan and StatCast and all the data is a big part of what we do, but also the players having the ability to execute those pitches is even a bigger part.
What happened to Hawkeye, which was the technology they use, they still to this day use in tennis, that was supposed to replace TrackMan, but I don't think it has. What happened to it?
I'm not 100% sure, but I think Hawkeye is integrated into the StatCast with the cameras.
Okay.
You know, for me, I'm just getting the StatCast Hawkeye information and TrackMan information and blending it all into one big pile of information, and we're all sorting it out what's best for each guy.
So when you have this pile of information, like all information, we're going to look at some of it that we really value, and then some of it we're like, I'm not so sure about. So when you look at that, what are the things that you look at, whether it's for a starter, reliever, righty, lefty, velo guy, not velo guy? I mean, other than getting outs, what is the thing that you look at that you say that maybe your top or your top three things that you look at data-wise go, that's so important?
Well, I'm always looking at horizontal and vertical release. Where is he consistent in his release point with all his pitches? You don't want a guy throwing a breaking ball from a lower slot and throwing his fastball from a higher slot. I'm looking at spin rate to see, you know, if he starts losing RPMs on a pitch, maybe he's tiring out at certain points. That's one thing we get on the iPads during the game. You can look at the spin rates and determine, you know, is he losing his spin or maybe even gaining his spin every now and then? Is he getting stronger? Obviously, you're looking at, pitches in the side to strike zone. Can he get swing and misses in the zone? Does he have to go outside the strike zone to get swing and misses? Where does he move his fastball best? You know, where does his horizontal movement and his vertical movement play? You know, a lot of sinker ballers are 17 inches of horizontal movement. So that's like starting it at one corner of the plate and the ball running all the way back to the other corner of the plate. So you kind of start understanding, when you start understanding these numbers, you start being able to, you know, help pitchers where they can start pitches and where they can end up.
Are you able to fight for one of your guys on the mound with the numbers? When you know, it could be, hey, we've called to the bullpen, but you're looking at a Blackburn like in Boston, or you're looking at a Frankie Montas, you can say, hey, the numbers say he's as strong or getting stronger. Are you able to use the numbers to fight for your guys while they're out there? Because it just seems like everybody's got a quick hook these days.
Well, I think, you know, the numbers are never in the starter's favor third time through the lineup. And the scoreboard will dictate that. The numbers of him third time through the lineup will dictate that. I think, you know, you're dealing with a slippery slope, because if you got a rested reliever who's one of your better options and you're in the third time through and that starter is getting through the third time, you want him to get through the third time. But if it's a close game and you got somebody well rested down there and your starter's given up a couple runs, I think it's time to go to the bullpen. But if your starter and the scoreboard dictate that he can go fully through the third time and maybe even a fourth time, then you run that. So the scoreboard has a lot to do with the decision making and then the ability of what the pitcher's actually doing that day as well.
You know, when you think about your pitchers right now, you know, there's teaching versus maintaining. What, you know, we're middle of the season. What is the date today? The 21st, 22nd? Yeah, we're past the middle of June. We're about to be in July. We're mid-season. So tell us the difference between teaching versus maintaining.
Well, maintaining, you're just really not giving viable options to, you know, a process. So for me, I always feel like I'm teaching and wanting guys to take their game to a little bit higher level. But the mental concentration is very important. You know, we got a lot of guys with little experience in the big leagues, and they have to understand that command is very important, because once we start playing our division over and over and over again, and those hitters keep seeing you, they know what you're trying to do, you know what they're trying to do, they know what you know, you know what everybody's trying to do. But if you execute those pitches to those hitters, you know, the likely outcome will be in your favor. So a lot of it is just teaching these guys that command will pay off.
You know, I made a lot last night of Jonah Bride's third at-bat, where it was a 13-pitch at-bat. and Marco Gonzalez was cruising. And all of a sudden, here's Jonah Bride fouling it off, looking to pitch, fouling it off. 13 pitches. Gonzalez wasn't the same after that. What is it when a guy has an at-bat like that later in the game versus a starting pitching? What does that do to that starting pitcher?
Well, as you know, it's a grind out there as a starting pitcher. And when that guy keeps fouling all balls off, you're thinking, man, just put one in play. And Jonah did a great job and got that base hit to left field. And, you know, it shouldn't affect some guy's confidence, but every now and then it can get in your dome a little bit. But, you know, he did a great job of battling him and getting his pitch count up, and then we ended up scoring two runs off him.
Yeah, no, it definitely works. How Tommy Malone, what do you got for me on Tommy Malone as he's making his way to the former A now with the Seattle Mariners?
Oh, crafty lefty. You know, he's that crafty lefty who you know, he's sustainable because he pitches. He throws strikes. He moves his baseball around. He's a great competitor. And I can't say enough about Tommy.
Been in the game now a long time.
Been in the game a long time.
Yeah, there he is. Tommy Malone bringing him in. So it's like
he's got the equalizer. You know, when you know, I always talk about our famous saying, if hitting is time and pitching is disruption of timing, and Tommy has done that over his career. And when you can locate a heater and disrupt hitters' timing, you're going to be in this game a long time.
You're like the warm-up act.
I'm the warm-up act for Tommy.
Well, thank you very much. We always appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll talk to you next homestand.
Sounds good.
All right, we got Tommy Malone coming in. It was a Scott Emerson from one left-hander to another here on A's Cast Live. Of course, Tommy, we remember his great times here with the Oakland Athletics and – you know, some really big games that he pitched. He's back up with the Seattle Mariners, and it's great to see you. As we've stepped our game up since the last time you were there. You now can watch the show on YouTube.
Okay.
You can watch it on Twitter, so it's just not streaming audio-wise. You can see it on video. So it's great to have you back. I know you're back up with the Mariners.
Yeah.
How are you?
Great. Can't complain. I'm back here. I'm, you know, kind of where it all started, and, I mean, it's good to be here for sure.
The feelings when you step back out here, what are they like?
Great, great feelings. I mean, the Athletics are kind of the first, you know, real shot at being in the big leagues. So it's always, you know, it's great to look around and kind of see the familiar stadium and just kind of bring back those old memories.
Yeah, reality much hasn't changed since you left.
Yeah. No, it hasn't changed, but, like, that doesn't matter much, you know. It's what happens on the field and, you know, what's happening in the stands and in the clubhouse and stuff like that. You know, what it doesn't matter what it looks like is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, well, I mean, the relationships I saw, you know, we were talking about you with Emo as you were walking over, and there's Mickey Morabito. You're seeing him, Vince Catronio, a lot of the same faces.
Yep.
And I think that's one of the great things for guys that had such great moments here, as you did with some teams here and in the postseason. For when you come back to see those familiar faces, it just takes you back to that time that was so special.
Yeah, of course. It's always nice seeing familiar faces, you know, no matter where I go. But especially coming here, you know, obviously, like I said, like kind of where it all started. And, you know, I spent a majority of my career, you know, in this place. So or majority in one spot in this place. But, you know, it's always nice to see these guys. And I was actually thinking to myself, like, it's not the same on the field, but, you know, everywhere else, you know, it's about the same. So it's nice to see everybody again.
So back in the big leagues, tell us how this year's been going for you.
It's been good. You know, started off a little rough. You know, signed with them a little late in spring training. Was dealing with some stuff as soon as I signed. So I was in Arizona for a little bit. Cleaned that up. And then started pitching in Tacoma, and you know I think I've had seven starts there, and you know pitching really well. So now they're giving me the opportunity up here. So you know right now I can't complain. I get to keep putting on a jersey, get to keep pitching, keep playing. You know this kid's game, trying to soak up as much as I can. You know before it's all over, and yeah, just trying to have fun and enjoy it.
For you this off season and affected all of us for, I mean, you're talking about the business of baseball. Just what was that like as a player, a team, looking for that team? What was the lockout like for you?
It wasn't fun by any means. No, I didn't get one call before you know, before the lockout, even during the lockout, because technically I was not considered a big league free agent because I had signed with the Reds, played AAA and all that last year to end the season. So technically I could have, you know, signed in the middle of the lockout. But still, you know, it was just, it was very weird.
There wasn't really much going on anywhere.
No,
it was,
yeah, yeah.
It was odd.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. It was just, it was kind of an unsettling feeling. You know, obviously like you run scenarios through your head and it's like, nobody's calling, like, could this be it? You know? But you know, once it was over, you know, I continued to throw. Obviously we didn't know how long it was going to last, but I continued to throw, in preparation for the year. And yeah, you know, I still felt good, so you know, I wasn't going to give up. And you know, eventually had a couple teams call. They came out, saw a bullpen, obviously the Mariners being one of them, and just went from there. They signed me, what, maybe 2 days, 3 days later, and I showed up to spring training.
And knowing that you were going to have a shot to get to the big leagues, right? That's
yeah.
One of the selling points for you.
Absolutely, yeah. I think it helped, you know, being here in 2019. Pitching, I thought, pretty well for them. They know me, so you know, I think as long as I can continue to be myself, pitch well, I give myself a good shot of getting back up here.
What is it like right now in that Mariner clubhouse? Because I know they had the team meeting, they've had some struggles. Just give me the vibe, what it's like in there.
Yeah, it's still great in there. You know, stuff that happens on the field. You know, obviously I've been with some teams that, you know, you carry it off, and it's almost just like a. It's just a business, you know, we're just going out there and playing a game and going home. But this group of guys is different than that. You know, even though the record's not showing, you know, what we think that, you know, we can be, it's, you know, it's lively in there, having fun, joke around. It's still, you know, it's still the same as if we were winning. You know, it's still a lot of fun. And I think that's probably what's going to, you know, kind of turn the corner, help turn the corner, I guess, is you need those guys in there to keep it loose. And when it's dark, you know, don't get too dark, you know, keep it loose, have fun, and continue to play this game like it's a kid's game, because really it is, and you're supposed to have fun doing it.
We were talking yesterday about team meetings, and you've heard there's the ones where we're throwing all the coaches out, we want everybody out of here, we don't want you to be a part of it. You know, and then there's the ones where coaches are involved. And do they really work in your career? You've probably been through a few of them.
Yeah.
Do they really work in a game where you play every day versus, I guess, if you're like a football team that plays once a week, but a baseball team that plays every single day, how much does it really work?
It's hard to say, because I think in the immediate future, I think it helps a lot, actually. You know, obviously you're usually doing it on the day of a game, you know, before, or I guess you could do it after the game. But I think it helps, because you get in that mindset of, you know, like let's go. So you have that like kind of burst of energy, and you know, that burst of energy might not last the rest of the season, but it kind of kickstarts you into something that maybe a different gear that you weren't in before. So I think it helps. You might not see it, obviously, because, you know, like you said, it's a long season. You're going to go through your ups and downs. But I think overall, you just kind of get into that new gear and burst of energy, and kind of hopefully that gets you kind of back on track.
I asked Scott Emerson, I said, if you could ask Tommy one question, this is his question.
Okay.
Talking about sustainability, staying at this level, and not being a big part of the velo world.
Yeah.
That's not your gig. Your gig is pitching. So what he wanted to know is, what is the key to staying here and sustaining the career as you don't have the big velocity?
Continue to get outs, no matter what that looks like. I think, you know, I've been able to do it for the most part. Obviously, I've had my struggles, but I think just trusting myself and the type of pitcher that I am, and you know, knowing that I've had success at this level doing it the way that I'm doing it, you know, I think a lot of it is mentality. You got to go out there and know that you're going to get the guy out. You know, if you go out there and you doubt yourself, then you already lost. So I think for me, it's just confidence to go out there knowing that I'm going to get these guys out, and not backing down.
Yeah, as Emo says all the time, it's about the disruption of timing of the hitter. Mm-hmm. And we've got plenty of guys that throw 100 miles an hour who've got ERAs over 5.
Yeah.
So when I hear about it, it's all about velo. I go, well, then, you know, why are all these guys who throw so hard getting racked?
Yeah.
I mean, still the key is hitting the spots.
Yep.
I mean, throwing strikes, utilizing your defense. I mean, it's not – people act like pitching's changed, and I go, really?
Yeah. No, it definitely hasn't changed, especially the style that, you know, that I use is, like you just said, command the zone. Throw strikes, let your defense do the work. Obviously, you know, there are going to be games that they find holes, they drop in the outfield, and, you know, it doesn't end up going your way. But, you know, over time, I think the success rate is going to be in your favor if you continue to throw strikes and pound the zone and just give yourself a chance.
You know, we're all talking about it. I don't even know if you guys know it. The whole thing about the Mississippi mud on the baseballs and how they've been doing it and how they've sent out the memo of how they want them to do it. Do you guys pay attention to any of that?
Me personally, I mean, I honestly, I just got up here. So
yeah,
I kind of saw what happened with our guys and the when Upton got hit and, you know, the whole, you know, the balls are looking like they're not rubbed up and stuff like that. And, you know, in some cases I've been a part of, you know, places where it doesn't – it looks like it comes straight out of the wrapper. and it's not a fun feeling because, like, they do feel very slick when they're like that. But, you know, I pitched the other day and I thought they were okay. So, I mean, this was after the fact. So
after the memo.
I'm sure that they took a little bit of extra time. But, I don't have a lot of experience on that one, at least this year for sure.
So it feels like a brand-new golf ball you've taken out of a sleeve?
Yeah. Like they just took it right out of the wrapper and threw it out. That's how sometimes it feels. And, I mean, you see these guys like I don't remember who it was, but the guy for the Angels, he's grabbing the balls and just throwing them. I actually remember someone for us did that back in 19. I don't remember who it was, but
I just remember, in my head, I can see it.
He's grabbing a ball, looking at it. Nope. Looking at it. Nope. Throwing it out. Kept throwing it out. And so, I mean, I think it's been probably an issue for a little while, and I don't know.
Is that odd that we're in 2022 and we're still talking about this?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I don't know.
I mean, your entire career. Think about it. We've questioned what ball we using. Is it wound too tight or the seams?
I mean, I feel like this wasn't an issue. At least I didn't notice it until, what, maybe the last 4 or 5 years. I really didn't think about it. You know, the first part of my career, I don't remember ever looking down at a ball and thinking this doesn't look rubbed up enough. So I think it's been more recent than you know, the first part.
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah. We're still talking about the ball after all these years. Hey, I know you guys are warming up right now. I know we only had so much time. Hey, thank you for stopping by.
Yeah.
You're always one of our favorites.
No, I appreciate
that. We appreciate it, and we wish you nothing but the best of luck. And go out there and give them hell with the Mariners, and great to see you back in the big leagues.
I appreciate that. Thanks for having me on.
We got more coming up next right here on A's Cast Live.
The Coliseum has gone by many names, but none better than The Last Dive Bar. Hi, everyone. Ken Korak here, and my friends at Last Dive Bar are helping us celebrate our longtime home. Last Dive Bar has the most unique merchandise for all Oakland baseball fans. T-shirts, sweatshirts, the Ray Fosse line, and my personal favorite, the lights have taken full effect. Visit their website at lastdivebar.com or follow them on social media at Last Dive Bar. All proceeds are invested back into the A's Community Fund and their affiliated charities. Go to lastdivebar.com. That's Last Dive Bar.
Streaming from the East Bay, A's Cast Live continues with Chris Townsend.
It has turned out to be a beautiful day here in Oakland, California. Game 2 between the Athletics and the Seattle Mariners. Taking a look around Major League Baseball, I think it's kind of crude that I look into the playbook and it says about the Angels that the Angels stink.
There's no lie there.
They've lost 9 of 15 under the great Phil Nevin, their new manager.
Oh, do you want to hear something crazy, too, real quick? Now you're talking about the Angels. They're honoring the 2002 World Series team tonight. Guess who will not be there?
Oh, it's been 20 years.
Guess who's not been there? Guess who will not be there?
Mike Socha.
Joe Maddon won't be there. They fired him. He will not be welcome back. It was in the notes. Read it. It's in the note in the MLB notes. It says that Maddon won't be there. Mike Socha will be there. Tim Salmon, although he works for the Angels broadcast.
Do they not invite him?
I don't know. It just says that Joe Maddon won't be there.
Hey, it'd be Joe, it's going to be good if you don't show up.
Yeah.
we're going to pay out the rest of your contract, Joe, but I don't think you need to show up.
But, yeah, the Angels do stink.
You might want to get into the picture somehow.
I know. That's what I was waiting for you because you're
– You want me to move?
Yeah, you be the guest now.
Okay, I'll be the guest. This is what we want to provide you. If you're listening, thank you. God bless you. But we want to provide on YouTube, and on the A's YouTube channel, of course, on Twitter, at AthleticsCast24, your ability to see batting practice. You're able to see everything that's going on right now. Griff, turn it so you can see the hitters right now. You can see what they're doing. We like to move, especially when we have taped interviews. We like to show you everything that happens here in Major League Baseball before the game starts and how they get ready. That's one of the advantages that we have here on A's Cast Live. Now, Shohei Ohtani.
He had a great night last night.
Became the first Jet. He's pitching tonight. He's 5-4.
Yeah. Same ERAs you had around the same time last year.
But last night, the two bombs, 8 RBIs. No. Do you have the highlights?
I don't have the highlights, no.
You just put it on paper then, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
So, no Japanese-born player, 2 home runs and 8 RBIs in one game.
The last two guys are previously Japanese-born players are driving 7 runs in a game.
Wait. Hideki Matsui.
That's one with the Yankees in 09. Had to bring the Yankees in at some point, didn't you?
I was going to say former A. Yeah. You're the one that brought up former Yankee.
I
know Hideki Matsui is an A.
And White Sox legend Tadahito Iguchi did it as well in 06.
Wouldn't have guessed that.
I would have said, well, no, Ichiro wasn't a cottage. If I was going to guess one.
I would have guessed Ichiro.
Yeah, Ichiro or, yeah, he's probably the only one. Maybe Nori Aoki or, yeah, that would have been one. Yeah, Ichiro would have been the guy. But for Japanese player to ever drive in 8 runs in a game. By the way, the Angels lost the game 12-11 in extra innings to the Royals. Now, you mentioned that Ohtani's pitching tonight. And according to BetMGM, he has the second best odds to win the MVP behind only Aaron Judge of the New York Yankees. But Ohtani's on pace for 34 homers, 103 RBI, and 16 steals this year.
It's a pretty decent year to go on top of everything he's doing as a pitcher.
Yeah, this is a generational talent. We appreciate what he's doing, but I don't think people are still appreciate him enough for what he's doing. And he's so young. And the Angels got to make a decision.
Well, how much more do you need to appreciate? Everybody just talks about him 24/7. I mean, if he played for the Yankees.
He still can. He's a free agent soon.
I mean, let's be honest. We don't talk about Shohei Ohtani enough.
I don't think so. Because all I hear about is Aaron Judge.
So should we just call it Ohtani Live? Forget Ace Cast Live. Just call it Ohtani Live.
Every day, it's a 5-minute segment dedicated to Ohtani. I'm kidding. Because we're gonna do that, and you're gonna talk about Aaron Judge.
I want to talk about Rendon. How's Rendon doing?
Out for the year. That's a good contract.
That buying or selling question about the Astros and it being a one horse race, I think my answer is still looking pretty good.
They won again today, so there you go with that. Yordan Alvarez has 21 home runs on the year already. 21. I told you years ago he'd be the greatest home run hitter ever, and you laughed at me.
Well, the thing that it's not their offense. It's their pitching and their defense. Their run prevention is off the charts. When are we supposed to have Nick Allen?
Whenever BP is over, which is now.
Okay.
So, but yeah, they're going to get McCullers back at some point if he's not already. No, he's not back yet.
Nope.
Verlander's been good, but let's see, Christian Javier and
Urquidy.
I think Urquidy pitched today.
He was yesterday.
Then who pitched today for them? Luis Garcia.
Urquidy took care of the Mets yesterday.
Yeah, and the Mets lost again today.
Oh, is that a little two-game sweep of the Mets there, Griff? You can't see him. He's a big Mets fan. I mean, he had a World Series ring already getting ready for the Mets, whole thing.
They had the parade planned out.
Yeah, they already had a parade. Yeah, in Manhattan, it's not going to happen. And the guy who got his first career dinger last night, Nick Allen, joins us here on A's Cast Live. Last time we were just, big league, family, everything. How nice is it to come back up? You're not dealing with all that. You're coming back just to play. How good has that been?
I mean, amazing. You know, it's obviously it's great to have my family here, you know, for my debut. But now, like, it's just time to play some baseball, try to help the team win whichever way I can. So I think that's what I came in with the mentality to do. And, you know, it's still, like, obviously it's the big leagues, so it's a little different. But, you know, I came with a better mindset for sure.
You got the change up, and you didn't miss it. When you hit it, did you know it was gone?
You know, I didn't know it was gone. It felt good. I just was like, just don't catch it. Whatever you do, don't catch it. Let me get on base right here.
Yeah.
And, you know, fortunately went over the fence. So I was definitely happy when I saw that.
And when you're going around the bases, you're flying around. What are you thinking? Like, I mean, the adrenaline's going. I mean, do you think, wow, my first big league home run? What's going through your mindset as you're rounding the bases?
You know, I was definitely thinking about that. I was like, dang, like, this is, you know, this is what it feels like. And, you know, I was just happy that I did it. Just happy to help the team put some runs on the board. But, no, it was definitely running around. I just thought about, you know, a lot of my family, you know, everything they've sacrificed. And it's like, dang, I wish they were here for it. Luckily, my fiance was in the stands. No, it was definitely a surreal moment. Definitely happened fast. You know, it happened quicker than I thought it would. So when I got back in the dugout, I was like, dang, that just happened. And, you know, I wish I would have slowed down a little bit more and just to take it all in.
A little more of a trot. A little more pimping it a little bit would have been. But it's your first one.
Yeah.
You're so jacked up. It's unbelievable. The speed of the game. Do you think it's going to change for you than the last time we saw you?
You know, I'm hoping it does. I think it's just baseball. So yesterday I felt great. So I know it will. And, I mean, it's definitely a difference. Obviously, that's why it's the big leagues. But it's baseball at the end of the day. So I'm more I play, the more I feel a lot better.
So tell us the difference, because obviously AAA, the great talent down there. I mean, you're still talking the best players in the world are in AAA, as well as here at the big league level. Just tell us what it's like, the speed of the game, because I know that's something David Forrest talked about with you. Speed of the game, AAA versus up here.
I think it's just getting used to playing in a big stadium with a lot of fans and being able just to lock in on the moment. I think when you do that, then it just becomes baseball. You know, so at the end of the day, locking in on what you need to do, making sure all that it's the outside noise. I think that's the biggest thing for sure. So it's keeping your blinders on, focusing on what you got to do, help the team win. And I think that's when it starts slowing down a lot easier. But there's just it's consistent talent up here for sure. You know, you don't get a night off. So not saying you do in AAA, but, you know, having to take in everything from the outside and then focus on what you got to do on the field. You know, it's I think that's the biggest thing.
And that's something that it's hard to explain to the fans, because the fans just see you guys as baseball players. They don't think about when you leave here, everything that's going on. And yeah, up here, it definitely is a different lifestyle. Yeah. It's just different. It's hard to explain.
It's hard for me to explain too. I mean, I'm just glad I'm here. Whatever I can do to help the team win is my obviously biggest priority. So. You know, I'm happy to be here.
And the cool thing, call him up, get him into the lineup. That's always good. What did Mark Kotze say to you when you came back up?
You know, it's just good to have you here. You know, all this, pretty much the same old stuff. I mean, Kotze, I mean, I know he's San Diego. I'm from San Diego, so we've kind of known each other before any of this. But, I mean, he was just, you know, be ready to play. And I think that's the biggest thing. I was ready to play, so.
And then we're going to see it back at the natural spot, shortstop tonight. Mm-hmm. The moving around, do you like it, or would you rather just say, hey, listen, I play short, let's roll here, old number six in the infield?
Yeah, I mean, growing up, I was just pretty much a lot of shortstop, but I knew I had to play second base because that would help me in my career. And I've done that my whole life, but wherever you need me is where I'm going to play, and that's where I'm comfortable playing, whether you need me in center field or catcher or whatever you need.
Center field?
But
have you played outfield?
Maybe like one time in like Little League or a couple times, I don't know. But whatever you need me to do. So tonight's shortstop, and obviously that's my main position, so I'm pumped and ready to go.
So when you've gone over to second base, have you gotten to a point to where you're as comfortable playing second as shorters, it's still a little different.
No, I've always been comfortable there. I think there's some certain things that I can keep working on, and that's what Emar and I are doing. Emar is our infielding coach and first base coach. And, we're just working on some certain flips, you know, that I can get in a game or being in the shift. I think that's the biggest thing because growing up, you never practiced a shift, especially for me at second base too. Just getting used to that. And other than that, I mean, I've played it. I've played a lot of games there, I think, throughout my minor league career. So I'm pretty comfortable.
Yeah, people don't think about how shifting changes. Like, from a shortstop standpoint, for years, we would take Marcus Semien and put him in short right field. I mean, he was getting balls. It'd be a ball roped to him. And he's, like, in front of the right fielder picking it up, throwing the guy at first base. I don't think people realize at second base we can move you up the middle, can move you. There's so many different ways you move guys in the shifts. And it's something I've asked and no one really wants to answer because I sit here and I watch every BP. I watch you guys take ground balls. No one's taking ground balls in short right field. It's like you guys don't practice it as much as they claim that they do. So talk about how the shifting around is – not as comfortable as people may think it is.
When you go out, I want to take ground balls today, you know, you just go out to, like, shortstop or second base, and that's kind of like those main positions. But, early work, we do get some work in there. Not a lot out in short right field. Something I can work on myself. Just get out there and tell Emar, like, I want to take some ground balls out here because it's something you need to practice. You're going to be in the game doing it. So
you've never made that throw.
Yeah, I mean, it's just something you just do naturally, right? So we do work on a lot of double plays in the shift. I think that's the biggest thing because you're in a different spot, it's different throws. But I could take it upon myself to go out there and take some more ground balls. We put in a lot of work, a lot of good work. Everything we do here is structured in the right way. So,
yeah, I just think that there is something about when you get a ground ball and you look, let's say you're at second base and you look and now you're throwing to second, and at turning the double play, there's a third baseman there and not a shortstop. There's just stuff that, like you said, you didn't see it as a kid and you don't see it as much. Then you get up here and it got to a point you're shifting on almost every batter. And then, you got guys who are used to playing on the right side. Now they're playing on the left side because we now shift against right-handed hitters more than ever before. I can see where it's just not comfortable.
No, it's learning. It's a learning step. It's more reps, the more you get, feel better, and more confidence you get. And I'm in a good place with it right now. So,
the aha moment now for you in the big leagues, like, I'm here. Ah, this is great. What's the aha moment?
I don't know. It's just being in the stadium. You know, after early work, you know, sitting on the bench and being just looking out and be like, man, there's not another level above this. You're here.
You have nowhere to go after this.
You have nowhere to go. So now it's just you staying here and doing whatever you can to put wins on the board. So I think that was definitely a big aha moment is when you're sitting on that bench and you're looking out and you're like, dang, we're here.
You know, I hate to bring up the record, but the record is what it is. It's the worst record in baseball right now. And obviously this is a team, same thing across with the Seattle Mariners. It's not the season that they're looking for. What is it like in the clubhouse you come back up? Because obviously things have changed. It's gotten a little bit worse from a standpoint. But what's the mentality like? How is the group right now in the clubhouse?
I think the group's sticking together really well. It's baseball. Things happen. We're doing everything we can. The coaching staff's putting together a great plan for us to keep getting better every day. And, I think it's just a process. And, it's a long season. So we're just taking it one day at a time. And from what I've seen is, everyone's sticking together.
And for you, though, personally, do you see that as, hey, this is opportunity?
You know, I'm here taking it one day at a time. If I get my chance to play, I'm going to try to make the most of it, for sure.
Well, I tell you what, this kid grew up going to the chicken pie shop in San Diego. We got to get him over to the chicken pie shop in Walnut Creek, one of our sponsors,
yes.
And get you over there and get you some chicken pies. He grew up on the original back in the day.
Yep, I did. No, 100%. I had my birthdays there when I was younger. Great spot.
So we're going to have to get you over to Walnut Creek. When's the next off day? It seems like we don't have off days ever. So next off day, we got to get you out there. But, hey, thank you for stopping by. We appreciate it. And I've been saying it here on Ace Cast Live, not going back to Vegas again. Next time you go back to Vegas on a vacation, you want to take a trip, staying here in Oakland, staying with the Oakland Athletics.
Hey, I'm Oakland A right now. Let's go.
Great stuff. We got more coming up next right here on A's Cast Live.
The Coliseum has gone by many names, but none better than The Last Dive Bar. Hi, everyone. Ken Korak here, and my friends at Last Dive Bar are helping us celebrate our longtime home. Last Dive Bar has the most unique merchandise for all Oakland baseball fans. T-shirts, sweatshirts, the Ray Fosse line, and my personal favorite, the lights have taken full effect. Visit their website at lastdivebar.com or follow them on social media at Last Dive Bar. All proceeds are invested back into the A's Community Fund and their affiliated charities. Go to lastdivebar.com. That's Last Dive Bar.
A's Cast Live continues from the town. Here's Chris Townsend.
All right, can I give you a scouting report on the game tonight? Julio Rodriguez, can you pitch around the guy? Can you stay away from him?
They do well when he does well.
He is on fire. His last eight games, he's hitting .355, a .992 OPS, five extra base hits, four ribbies, and when he hits, so do the Mariners. The Mariners, in their 30 wins, by the way, Rodriguez has hit .364 with an OPS well over 1,000 in his wins. Now, here's something about the Mariners.
Oh, you're going to go the stat I was just going to say? I think I know where you're going.
It's my show, right? Is it okay, Ray? Is it okay if I give the stat that
I'm going to introduce this is the great Ray Jensen. No relation to Alex Jensen.
No. Or Marcus Jensen, for that matter.
How do we know?
I did a 23andMe, and I don't. We were not any DNA relatives close
okay.
to Alex Okay,
I was just checking. Because Jensen's not that popular of a name.
No, it's not.
Not a lot of people have it.
And not unless you're from Norway.
And tell everybody out in A's land who are you and what you do.
Oh, I'm Ray Jensen. As they said, I'm the broadcast and media content coordinator for your Oakland Athletics, replacing Joey Liberatore, who moved to the SoCal.
Thank God. He was
the Italian stallion.
He was a load to deal with.
He did build us Joey Town.
Oh, I mean, just listen to that voice. Yeah. Makes my skin crawl. And what did you do before you got here?
Before here, I was at Sports Radio 1350 WOYK in York, Pennsylvania.
That's a powerhouse station.
Out there it is, yeah.
Yeah, it's like WFAN in New York. I've heard a lot about it.
I mean, the WFAN's here, and then we're like there, maybe even below.
What did you do there?
Everything from producing to doing some broadcasting. It was a small station. It was practically run by myself and my boss. So
it's like us.
Kind of similar.
Yep.
Just on a different level. You will be joining me on Friday. You're replacing Cody, as we don't know what Cody's doing, nor do we really care.
Well, he's been mentioned it a couple times. He's excited about the bolo tie.
Yeah, I got the bolo tie yesterday. Going to
For
that wedding.
What?
Going to a wedding in Texas.
Oh, that's this weekend?
It's Friday. I'm flying to Dallas tomorrow.
And the wedding's on Friday?
Yeah. Well, it's my wife's family. And you remember, we got married on a Thursday. They're getting married on a Friday. Costs less money.
It's unbelievable to me, all you people. And I think you're one. What day was your wedding on?
Thursday.
Yeah.
What
happened to getting married on Saturday like normal people?
Well, I did that the first time.
Because it's cheaper. All you cheap you-know-whats get married not on Saturday, so you have cheaper rates, but it affects all of us in our work days.
You're throwing my wife under the bus, and she's
I'll throw her under the bus. It's true. Why get married on a – why? Okay, she's cheap, and now her family's cheap.
Wow.
Married on Friday.
I didn't think I'd hear you call her cheap. I mean, she's a labor and delivery nurse. I'm just a broadcaster.
Did you or did you not get married on a Thursday?
Correct, I did get married on a Thursday.
And now someone in her family is getting married on a Friday.
That is correct. In Dallas, but they live in Mississippi. I don't know how this makes sense.
Back to the Mariners. Mariners are an MLB worst 3-29 when they're scoring three runs or fewer. What are they when they score four runs or more?
I don't have that stat in it, but it's in there.
Oh, but Mr. Stat, you don't have the stat? What stat did you have?
Well, if they're 3-29, three runs or fewer, that's the key. Hold them under three.
But you don't have the other stat.
Well, I'm assuming they're probably.
You have half the stat.
I'm assuming they're 27 and 10 when they score four or more.
It's like half the marriage.
Is that correct? 27 and 10? Because
they're 27 and 10 when they score four runs or more. So what did they score last night?
Eight.
Ball game over. Seattle has scored four runs or more in all nine of the wins this month.
It's pretty good.
So if you score, you hold them to under three, you got a shot. Is that what the A's are banking on? But you got the right guy on the mound. You got Paulie Wendé, who, if you weren't listening here, when was it? 2 days ago?
Paulie was on Friday, the other day, last Friday.
Wasn't when it was 100 degrees.
No,
yesterday.
So it wasn't yesterday.
The magic for Paul Blackburn, we mentioned it with Scott Emerson, it's not the curveball. It's not breaking balls. It's the magic. It's pizza.
Yeah, pineapple on his pizza. All you kids out there who dog people for using pineapple on their pizza, a major league pitcher does it, and probably the A's all-star. Is that too soon?
I think it's way too soon. We got a long way to go before the
All-Star. It's like a month.
Yeah, a lot can happen in a month.
True, yeah.
You guys all were crowning Danny Jimenez as the next Dennis Eckersley, and what's happened since then?
True, although Paul Blackburn's fourth in the American League in earned run average. That's ERA for everyone out there who doesn't know what earned run average stands
for. If it just so happens that Paul Blackburn gets that great honor to represent this great organization in the Major League Baseball All-Star Game down at Chavez Ravine, will he have pizza?
Oh, he has to.
The night before the All-Star Game.
He has to.
David Force is here. That's right. It is time. He's on time. It is 5 o'clock. It is 5 o'clock. It is time for the David Force Show, which you can hear here on A's Cast and A's Cast Live. How are you? It's been a while.
It has. I got my afternoon caffeine. I'm a little.
Are you ready to rock?
I'm a little worn out, so I need a pick-me-up.
You got that little punch, and it gets you going through the night?
It does. The manager ran me ragged on the pickleball court early this morning, so I need a little pick-me-up right now.
You've been busy. You've been traveling a lot. So where have you been, and what have you been doing?
I haven't traveled a ton. I was in Boston with the team, which was nice. Took the family back there. But I've been out. I did go see some of the college games towards the end. And, just keeping track of everybody.
So is it weird that, like, years ago it's the June amateur draft,
yeah,
and now it's, like, end of July, you let the College World Series play out when before, even going back to the very first ever pick, Rick Monday by the Kansas City Athletics was picked during A-State playing at the College World Series. Is that weird for you? Have you guys adjusted?
It's hard to get used to. No, I mean, I don't think it's going to change, so we do need to get used to it. The July timing now, I know, you know, the people at Major League Baseball like to line it up with the All-Star Game and market it and make a big deal, and it was great last year. They filled a theater. It was really nice. It's tough on our schedule. Most of the amateur stuff will have been over for, you know, the better part of 6 weeks. Our scouts are, you know, they're out there looking for something to do right now. And then it's hard when you don't get the kids in your system until the end of July and they miss kind of that extended summer program. But it is what it is. It gives us more time to prepare. It gives us more time to overthink things, I'm sure, and read those mock drafts, and things are changing. Do you guys have a mascot here? Is that what we're looking at?
We have a baby kitten that's been hanging around the A's Cast Live set on the field here. We got the lucky kitten.
I hope it's got runs in it. So, we'll read those mock drafts. Eric and I will text 10 times a day about different players and, you know, overthink every decision. But at some point we'll finally get to July, 17th, and we'll get to make some picks.
When you started hearing about players not participating in games,
mm-hmm,
whether it be at the high school level, I'm sure at the college level it's coming. We saw that in football, right? Seeing guys backing out of bowl games. You're like, you did all of this to play in this bowl game, and now you're not going to play? You like that? You worried about that? What do you think about for the future?
I'm a little worried about it. I mean, we've really only seen sort of isolated cases. There's a high school pitcher in Florida this year who kind of ended his season early, in order to, quote, prepare for the draft. We haven't seen it too much. I don't know that we've seen it at all in college. But obviously football, it's become a thing, and there's no doubt it will start being more prevalent in our game. There's such an emphasis put on the draft and on being healthy for the draft. And you've seen the impact it has on players who don't get to the draft healthy. You know, it's only natural that guys and their representatives or agents are going to start, you know, kind of making concessions to make sure that happens.
I've known you for a long time, and the one thing that I do know is you hate losing.
Mm-hmm.
You absolutely hate it. And the one thing that, and I talked about this either last night or the night before on the A's Clubhouse show, is that it's just not your DNA, and you don't like this, oh, we got a ton of time. You never feel like that. So just tell the fans how you're not enjoying how this season goes.
No, I said I did. I talked to Matt Kawahara from the Chronicle last week when I was in Boston, and I think the quote was it's frustrating to watch this. And you know, that I'm not sure that totally sums it up. It's just, yeah, I empathize with the fans who also want to see a winner out there. And look, everybody is working their butts off. That is the one thing I'm confident of, whether it's Mark and his staff, whether it's the 26 guys who are here at any given time. There's a lot of work going into it. The fact is we've run into some teams that are more talented than we are, and that's frustrating, and it's frustrating not to be able to do anything to get over that hump. And like you said, no one enjoys losing consistently. I will say, like, the wins have been great. Like, you win a game on a getaway day against Boston, and it sort of changes your perception of the whole trip. And you come out here and you get a win on a home game when there's a good crowd here for Father's Day, and it's fun, and it gives you that incentive. You know what you're trying for, but we just haven't gotten there enough.
We know that building the roster was not easy because of the lockout, and it was kind of rushed. You got the team for the first part of the season. How much should we expect changes now coming as we're into June, about to July, seeing some younger guys? What should we expect?
It's a good question. I mean, we've made some changes already, obviously. You know, Jonah's here, came up when we were on the road. Nick is here, you know, both guys in the lineup last night and tonight. And I think there will be more changes. I mean, guys have to earn their way here. We're not just going to throw guys out on a big league field to evaluate them if they're not ready and if they haven't put in the work and performed at AAA. So I know there are some other guys at AAA that a lot of fans are saying, hey, why isn't so-and-so here? What's the harm in bringing guy here to see if we're not going to win every night anyways? You guys have to be ready to get here. And look, there are really good examples of players who've gone up and down and up and down and still, you know, gone on to have a lot of success. I mean, Matt Olson is the first one that always comes to mind for me, who, you know, rode the, I think at that point it was Nashville.
Nashville
yeah. to Oakland shuttle five or six times that season. You know, I think it's the Memorial Jerry Blevins shuttle based on his year here. But, you know, ideally, you don't want guys going back and forth. You want them to be ready. You want them to have proven everything they have to a AAA. So, to answer your question, I think there will be more guys we work into the mix here. But we want to do it, you know, we want to do it responsibly, sort of methodically.
You know, everybody talks about Nashville's the new party place, you know, all the different parties that are going there, bachelor parties. Matt Olson may be the only guy going, I hate Nashville. Yeah, I never want to go back there
he
again.
He couldn't wait to get out of there. So no, it's I enjoyed going there when our team was there. It was a good time. That ballpark's close to downtown, so I understand the parties. But, yeah, if you're a AAA player there, Nashville's the worst place in the world.
What is the key when you evaluate, and I don't even know if there is, but if, you know, what is the key when you're evaluating these young guys down in AAA, they're not so young anymore.
Yeah.
Is he is ready? Yes, let's give him a shot versus saying, not more seasoning.
There's not one thing you can point to, you know, pitchers or position players. I think it's important, you know, that Kotz and Emo are in touch with Fran Reardon, our manager down in Vegas, to get a sense of how a guy's playing, how he's, you know, how his confidence is and performing. I mean, we can see, you know, we can see all the metrics, particularly now they've got StatCast in all the AAA ballparks. So we can see the same numbers we see here in terms of, you know, if a guy is hitting the ball hard but not getting hits, or if a pitcher's ERA is high but he's given up, you know, he's not giving up hard contact. You can see all that stuff. Again, it's sort of a feel thing for making sure a guy sort of stays afloat here and doesn't quote drown in the big leagues, because you don't want, you know, you don't want guys going through that if they don't have to. You don't want them going back because they didn't succeed here. You know, you want them to at least stay above water when they're here and then progressively get better.
We kept hearing Jonah Bride shows up. You're going to love him. The more you watch him, you're going to love him. Just wait. Just watch. And the more I watch, and I know even though he comes in a little bit, I keep seeing hits. And last night, I couldn't get enough of that 13-pitch at-bat. I know he grounded out to first.
Yeah.
But he gets that count, and it gets 3-2, and then those last three that he fouls off, and then I'm like, 13-pitch wore out Marco Gonzalez. That wore him out. And I just thought, that's a grinder. That's a kid who's 2-for-2, third at-bat, not giving up an at-bat. I mean, I love that mentality.
Yeah, and those are some of like the sort of immeasurables that you look at with bringing guys up. And look, Jonah's going to – he's off to a good start. He's got his hits. He's going to struggle. I mean, young players do. He's going to go through an 0-for-15 at some point. But the things that you have already noticed about him are the quality of at-bats, the lack of swing and miss. He went into Fenway Park. He wasn't scared at all. You know, whatever it was, this – third or fourth inning out there, he took 105 off the chest.
Broke the chain.
At third, did it?
Yeah, broke his chain,
that.
Yeah.
But those are things, and Kotz mentioned it to me immediately. He said, hey, any guy who comes in here, takes those at-bats, takes that ball off the chest, like, I want to put him back in the lineup. I want that guy to succeed and to keep going out there and grinding, like you said. And you do, you see things like the 13-pitch at-bat. You see him getting his hits and busting his butt and working hard in early work. So these are some of the things that you look at aside from just the fact, you know, that he's hitting, you know, 360 whatever in AAA to make the decision to bring him here.
So Mark Kotze is so competitive.
I told you, he ran me off the court this morning. I had no chance. Straight sets in pickleball.
So when you're going through a tough time, how much do you have to kind of talk – I don't want to say talk him off the ledge, but, yeah. I mean, because you've been doing this for so long. This is his first year. He's grinding to win every game like he should. That's his job. But, yeah. Like, how much do you have to kind of help him out?
We spend a lot of time talking, nights after games, mornings after games. We do talk a lot and try and, you know, focus on the positives, on the progress, on what was good, what we can take into the next day. You don't want to focus just on the loss every time it happens, because it's not productive. As we get the tractors rolling by here, it's not productive just to think about the loss and what went wrong and what we could have done differently, because it's going to happen. Like, we know that even in the best of seasons, you're going to lose 60 times, and you don't want to harp on it. You don't, as a manager, you don't want to sit there and second guess yourself and rethink. So we've talked a lot and trying to focus on, again, what positives can we take away? What can we learn? What can you impart to the players that they did well, that's going to help us win the next night? So we do have a lot of conversations.
How'd you feel about going back to 13 pitchers?
You know, we were there when we got to Atlanta. Like, when we brought up Davidson, we got there. It's fine. It's just sort of the reality. We've managed it with 8 pitchers in the bullpen for however many years now. I think 9 was a little bit of a luxury, but we'll be fine. Emo and Kotz have done a really good job with the pen this year.
Is it just weird how some people just freak out over, like, certain – they just have a hard time getting their arms around
things? I think it's just a mindset. Like, we talk a lot here about things you can and cannot control. Like, hey, if that's the rule – let's figure it out. Let's not worry about whether it's a good rule or not a good rule.
And what do you think we should do long term about position players pitching? Because now it's getting to be a lot.
It is. I've seen some of the chatter out there and worried about it. I don't know. I mean, look, we like to have the flexibility to do it in a blowout game because you're playing for the next day and don't want to use an arm. And there are position players who can do it and be somewhat respectable. But ultimately, yeah, there's a chance that it gets a little out of hand and you know, you run into some ugly-looking innings. So I don't know what the answer is, but I know we're doing our best to maintain our chance to win the next day by saving some bullpen arms. But my guess is at some point MLB steps in on that one too.
You have your own Shohei Ohtani and Bethancourt, for God's sakes. He's actually been one of the great stories.
For sure.
And I just started noticing the way he keeps his hands in, driving the ball to right center, really saw it in Cleveland.
Yeah.
Ball going over the wall, ball off the wall. I mean, he can pull it, but just to watch him drive the ball the other way, Just, you know, what did you think when you got him, and what are you seeing with him now?
I think Christian's a really good story about, you know, about a positive to take away or about progress to make in season. Like, he clearly worked with Tommy, with Crony, made an adjustment with his hands and his approach. He talked about getting the ball a little bit more out front to drive it. I mean, we saw the high exit velos in spring training, and we saw them early in the season. You think, this guy only has 7 or 8 big league homers? Like, how is that possible considering the way the ball comes off his bat? So, you know, it's a thing that happens over the course of the season. You make adjustments. You work in the cage. I mean, fans don't get to see how much time these guys spend in the cage early, before games, even after games. And for Bethancourt to make that adjustment and then see the results like we did on that road trip is, you know, that's what you're hoping to see out of over the course of a season.
And super athletic behind the dish. Yeah. And just kind of like the modern-day player really has to be a guy that can play multiple spots because you only have so many guys on the bench.
Yeah, no, we need that flexibility. And you saw, you know, you see it sort of everywhere. Like, Jonah comes up, he can play third and second. He's played a handful of games in left field. Nick comes up, can play both positions in the middle. I mean, there are so few guys now who you just say, like, hey, here's your spot. You've got it. You're the everyday guy there. Everybody's got to be able to move around, and we've seen it for years and years with Chi, with Pinder, and then Canna before him. So it's for Bethancourt to be able to play first, to be sort of a third catcher on the roster, you know, between him and Vogt, they can both back up Murph. So it's really valuable to Cots to have those guys.
So we're about to get into July, which leads us to the trading deadline, mm-hmm. which means you're always going to be players.
Yep.
This time you're going to be a player with people calling about maybe the guy going tonight in Blackburn. We got Frankie Montas. I know you can't talk about calls, but where are we on that cycle? Is it now starting to – are the conversations starting? Is the groundwork starting to be laid?
Yeah, the conversations are starting. They have been for even a couple weeks now, and that's pretty typical. You know, we started out talking about the timing of the draft. That has sort of disrupted the usual flow of the season, where July is all about the trade deadline. So because the draft is where it is, you know, it interrupts that. You know, you spend a week and a half just in that draft room focused. It makes it a little harder to have the trade conversations. But they're starting now. You know, everybody likes to say, hey, let's do something early. Let's make a trade early. We're not waiting for the deadline. But then nobody wants to give up something that they feel like they don't have to unless there's a deadline pressing them. So, you know, we know how this game works, whether it's arbitration, the trade deadline, the CBA, like, the deadline is ultimately what helps things get done. So I imagine there'll be a lot of talk for the next 5 weeks, and then there'll be a run-up the last week to that deadline, which is a couple days late now. It's back into August now this year. So we'll have a couple extra days to play around.
I always say on this show I want to get a couple desperate GMs pitting you against each other and guys that need players. I mean, you're a poker player.
Right. It's deal-making 101. You get two parties who, you know, need to outbid each other, and that's how you create the best market, if you are a seller and that's what you're doing.
You can't let Kotze whip you in pickleball. Come on.
He's a Hall of Famer. He's a Fullerton Hall of Famer, a 17-year major leaguer.
You're the greatness of Harvard, for God's sakes. You're supposed to be able to outsmart the kid from Fullerton.
I'd beaten him a couple times leading up to today, but he stuck it to me pretty good.
Body doesn't fire like it used to, huh?
Really, not in this heat, man. No, I need cooler temperatures.
Good to see you, and hopefully we'll talk to you before the draft. But we know how you guys get. When you guys get towards that draft, it's like wherever this room is, you guys lock yourselves into this dark room. And yeah, how many rounds is it this year?
We're going 20.
It's still 20.
Yeah, 20 rounds. That's not changing either. I think we've got a 20 round draft from here to wherever. So we do 2 rounds in the comps the first night, then 3 through 10 on day 2, and 11 through 20 on day 3.
What happened to 70, or just keep drafting until no one wants to draft
anymore?
We're
going to have to find those guys somewhere else.
Do you like that? Would you rather have 30, 40 rounds, or do you like 20?
40 seem like a lot. 20 seems like maybe not quite enough, so somewhere in between. But, again, we don't control that, so we'll work with what we've got.
Great stuff as always.
All right, thanks, guys.
The David Forrest Show right here on A's Cast Live.
The Coliseum has gone by many names, but none better than the Last Dive Bar. Hi, everyone. Ken Korak here, and my friends at Last Dive Bar are helping us celebrate our longtime home. Last Dive Bar has the most unique merchandise for all Oakland baseball fans. T-shirts, sweatshirts, the Ray Fosse line, and my personal favorite, the lights have taken full effect. Visit their website at lastdivebar.com or follow them on social media at Last Dive Bar. All proceeds are invested back into the A's Community Fund and their affiliated charities. Go to lastdivebar.com. That's lastdivebar.com.
Streaming from the East Bay, A's Cast Live continues with Chris Townsend.
Trying to read these, buying or selling. How old is this Fernando Tatis buying or selling?
Oh, that's been in there for a while.
Okay.
I've been updating some of them, but we haven't done it in so long.
All right, just let's go. Give me some. Let's go.
All right. I'm not going to play the open because we don't need to. All right, so you want to start baseball or should we go football?
I'll go football. The National
Football League.
Dun-dun-dun-dun.
For the second time
Excuse me, let me get you in here.
For the second time at age 33, Rob Gronkowski has announced his retirement on social media. Gronk had previously retired after the 2018 season with the New England Patriots because of injuries.
Tom Brady's back.
Brady's back again. Here's a quote from his agent, Drew Rosenhaus. It would not surprise me if Tom Brady calls him during the season to come back and Rob answers the call. This is just my opinion, but I wouldn't be surprised if Rob comes back during the season or next season. Gronk is 24 TDs away from tying Antonio Gates for the most all-time for a tight end in NFL history. Buying or selling, Gronk will officially stay retired.
I'm buying.
You think he's done?
Yeah, he is. His body is taking a beating.
Yeah.
And that's why he retired the first time. And if Tom Brady didn't go to Tampa, I guarantee you Gronk would have stayed retired. But that was, all right, one last ride. Let's do it. And they won the Super Bowl. They went for another Super Bowl yesterday. But if you go down his injury list, he's had a lot of injuries. He's taken a lot of hits. He has been one of the more physical big tight ends that you've seen in recent years, to where a guy like Tony Gonzalez or Antonio Gates, they were not as physical players as Gronk was.
No.
I'm not saying that they were soft. They're two of the great, and they're Hall of Famers.
Both former basketball players. Gronk was a legit football player.
I mean, Gronk's body has taken a lot. I think Gronk, at the age of 33, I think, and Tom – when Tom said, I'm done again, and Gronk was like, I'm done, I think Gronk realizes. See, that's something that Howie Long is great talking about, where Howie had a lot of money due to him by the L.A. Raiders, and he just said, you know what, my body couldn't take it anymore. I didn't want to hit anybody. I didn't want to be hit anymore. I'm done. There gets to be a point in these guys' careers, you can throw all the money you want, especially a guy who's done well with his money, like Gronk, and their body just doesn't want to do it anymore. I'm pretty sure after all the injuries, the surgeries and everything, at 33,
this is
where it gets dangerous. Like, you keep playing when you've had all these injuries, and then, you know, you want that quality of life to enjoy that money. And it gets scary as you start getting into your 30s, mid to late 30s.
Now, I'll get to this last one quickly, but remember, his head coach also retired too. The great Bruce Arians stepped down,
correct. And
Todd Bowles is now the head coach. So the Tigers are really bad, and I told you I'd do this yesterday. When you get to it, but I'll do it today. I was wrong about them. I'll admit I was wrong. Detroit stinks.
What? Did you admitted what?
Yeah, that I was wrong. They're 26-42.
Can you slow that down for me?
I was wrong.
Wow. Folks, this is the guy that knows everything. That can never be told any. You tell him something, you go, I knew that. I saw that. I read that. You're actually admitting you were wrong.
Yeah, well, I was wrong about the guy I used to root for. Thought he was going to be a good comeback story in AJ Hinch, but Detroit, I believe they're 26-42. They're averaging.
You're also wrong about your first marriage.
That's all. Yeah, that's true. Was it me? That wasn't just me, though. I think that was.
Well, it takes two to tango. Yeah. I get it. But
they're averaging 2.
Saying you're wrong.
Yeah, 2.88 runs per game.
No,
that's
offense.
Lowest in baseball. They're on pace to have the lowest runs per game since the 1968 White Sox, who averaged 2.86 runs per game.
There is a battle of bad right now between the A's, the Tigers. The Royals are in there. We just saw them. The Mariners
although
are creeping
the Royals,
in there.
Although the Royals just beat the Angels last night. Last in home runs for Detroit. A couple bad free agent signings. Eduardo Rodriguez is away from the team. Javi Baez is, well, he just stinks this year. Buying or selling, I close up for even getting reading the buying or selling question. Detroit will have the worst offense in MLB history.
What about the A's?
Remember how they started 10-9, the A's? You know what their record is since then?
The what?
The A's started 10-9. Do you know what their record is since then?
It's not very good.
It'll be 13-37.
We're on pace for
13-37.
We're on pace for the worst home winning percentage ever.
Yeah, what? I believe
the 39 St. Louis Browns.
I believe we're 8-26 at home.
Yeah, I mean we're. I'll buy it. Unfortunately, though, we're right behind it.
Yeah. Last one because we really got to go.
Who's coming up next?
We're gonna play the community spotlight. Buying or selling? AJ Hinch is back next season.
I buy he's still there.
Yeah, he has a contract through 2025.
Yeah, I buy he's still there. But I'm telling you, I hear, you know, our buddy Mike Farron talking about everybody's got time. You heard David Forrest.
Yeah.
Who's got time? You tell me Don Mattingly's got time?
No. No, probably not.
I can go through a couple organizations that don't have time. They don't have time. They've got to win.
Yeah.
David Forrest doesn't have – David Forrest tells you he doesn't have time. Who wants? Who really has a ton of time?
Detroit's been really bad at drafting recently. The last couple drafts have been good, but that's it.
People around the Nats got time.
Ken Rosenthal put it in his article today. The A's, Detroit, and us, the Nationals, and one other team are all the Reds are all lost causes for the rest of the year. That's what he said.
I mean,
Reds are beating the Dodgers right now.
I mean, how many managers could you see gone by the end of the year? Like last day of the season, next day. You could see 5-6 easily.
I could see the guy on the other side of the field.
Oh,
right now.
You think
the Browns of the Major League Baseball?
You think the guys to my left here they got time?
No, they're supposed to win this year.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's all we got.
The community spotlight with the great Vince Cotroneo.
Yep, that's next, and then you'll be back for Ace Total Access 5:40.
We want to thank Scott Emerson, Tommy Malone.
I'll go back in the picture.
Nick Allen. And the general manager, David Forrest, for stopping by A's Cast Live. We will not be on tomorrow because it's a day game. You can check me out tomorrow on NBC Sports California. I'll be doing A's pre- and post-game live. The great Joe Hughes will be filling in for me here on A's Total Access and the A's Clubhouse Show. And then we will be back on Friday.
At 2 o'clock, you and Ray Jensen.
The great Ray Jensen.
And you'll have the HUD man, Rex Hudler. You'll have Mark Kotze, and I'll find you guys one with someone else.
Great stuff. As always, we appreciate everybody watching and listening, and we'll be back in a few minutes with A's Total Access.
The Coliseum has gone by many names, but none better than The Last Dive Bar. Hi, everyone. Ken Korak here, and my friends at Last Dive Bar are helping us celebrate our longtime home. Last Dive Bar has the most unique merchandise for all Oakland baseball fans. T-shirts, sweatshirts, the Ray Fosse line, and my personal favorite, the lights have taken full effect. Visit their website at lastdivebar.com or follow them on social media at Last Dive Bar. All proceeds are invested back into the A's Community Fund and their affiliated charities. Go to lastdivebar.com. That's Last Dive Bar.
This has been a presentation of the Oakland Athletics.